हरे हे ओ सहना चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
Mantra 3. In Mantra 2, the result of following the instructions of the Lord were described. In Mantra 3, the effect of acting whimsically is presented. Depending on whether they obey the order of the Lord or not, all human beings are designated as suras and asuras. Quote, human life is distinguished from animal life due to its heavy responsibilities. Those who are cognizant of these responsibilities and who work in that spirit are called suras, godly persons. And those who are neglectful of these responsibilities or who have no information of them are called asuras, demons. Throughout the universe, there are only these two types of human beings. Sri Yashopanishad Mantra 3 Purport. So here, see, is the responsibility, this principle of responsibility. Someone who's responsible, then, you know, and meaning responsible to following God's laws, God's direction, that's asura. Right? And someone who's not, that's an asura, right? Unfortunately, in English it sounds exactly the same because of their grammatical structure. But the problem is, you know, it should be, I guess, say, an sura, right? So one is asura and one is an sura, right? But unfortunately, people don't use it this way, so you say one is asura and one is asura, it sounds the same. Problem is just like, yes, one must be a Vaishnava, you know. It's like, no, but in Sanskrit, a Vaishnava means not a devotee. No, but we're saying you should be a devotee, right? Being, you should be a Vaishnava. Right? It's a problem. It's not meant for... there's some subtleties in English that don't necessarily come out so well. Right? Okay, so the point is here is due to heavy responsibilities. It means you're following God's laws, right? The animals, the plants, the birds, everybody follows God's laws, though they're not doing it voluntarily. It is simply the modes of nature are acting, and they have no control over it. And so, therefore, then, they perfectly follow God's laws. Therefore, that's why in nature, when man's not involved, the nature works fine, right? It's complete. It's also perfect and complete. So all the, you know, moving and non-moving living entities on their own, everything will work perfectly, right, in its natural environment, because they all follow God's laws. Now, if the human being gets involved in that, which they're supposed to, then when they get involved, as they follow God's laws, then it also works nicely, because then everybody's following God's direction. But if they don't, then it's a problem. So this responsibility is actually what human life is about. Accepting, understanding human life, accepting that human responsibility. That's what we're trying to establish, right? So Ishapanishad's pointing out is that we have these responsibilities, then as a human being, we must accept it. So those who accept it, those are suras. Those who don't accept it, that's asura, right? That's why it doesn't work. So even on the devotional platform, if you don't accept some aspect of Krishna's directives, it will create a bad situation. The situation won't work nicely. Does that make sense? Right? Because it just means it's the mentality of the asura. It doesn't mean that the devotee becomes a non-devotee. It just means that you won't get a good result because you're not acting according to the devotional direction. Right? So Ishapanishad is pointing out is that all your activities should be God-conscious. They should be all be connected with the Lord. Then you'll always get a good result. right? And the good result means that you become God conscious, right? You might or might not get a good material result, you know, whether it due to your previous karma, it's due or not. But that's another thing, because what's important is not what you have, but what you do with it. So if you're God conscious, then whatever you have now, you'll engage properly. Whatever you're going to get in the future, you'll also engage properly. Right? So that means then whatever you're doing, then you'll get no bad reaction. Right? Because you're always properly situated. Right? Because how do you consider something bad? Right? Does that make sense? You go to Dubai. Right? And the place is booked. All you can get is reservations in the best 5-star hotel, in the best suite. Right? Okay? That's all you can get. There's nothing else available. So for some people that are used to staying in the 7-star hotels there, that's bad. You understand? So bad is a consideration. We're thinking, oh, all we have here is the pump water, and it's got so much iron in it. There's people in some places in the world that don't have any water at all. Or the pump, they got to walk, you know, a mile to get water and carry it back on their head. Right? And then they'll think that's bad. But then there's someone else where their pump is 5 miles away. Right? And somebody else, there is no pump. You understand? So there's always good and bad is actually only a perspective. That's why I have to be very, very careful in trying to decide. I've done my religious duties. I've been responsible. I follow God's laws. Where are the results? Right? We were discussing that yesterday. So that idea of thinking, where are those results? Then whose standard are we judging it by? Right? By God's standards, how everything's working, or by our own standards? Right? That's the difficulty. Right? Does that make sense? So that's what we're trying to deal with. This, like say, a friend has just painted their wall, and then they ask you, "Oh, how do you like the color?" And then you start talking about the texture. I don't know. I don't really like the really smooth wall. You know, I think it should be more of a natural, you know, like that. Or I don't like this kind of like Indian, you know, plaster job. You should, you know, have it properly, you know, done with a lime and that, and make it perfectly smooth. But you only asked about the color. You didn't ask about the texture of the wall. You didn't ask, what do you think of my wall? Right? Then it's a matter of, okay, the color, the this, the that, the placement, so many things, you know. Does that make sense? In other words, if you use your own judgment, you may get the thing wrong. They're asking you about this. They're not asking you about something else. So that's the whole idea, is that it's connected. So we performed action, it's getting a reaction. But then, depending on our perspective, we will give a judgment on whether that's good or bad. And if it's according to us good, then we'll think this religious process is good. If it's bad, by our judgment, we'll think there's something wrong with the process. Right? So that's why it's very important, is how you define it. What are your responsibilities in this? According to that, then you define what's right or wrong. Does that make sense? Because the idea is the right or wrong is how to go back to Godhead, not right or wrong how to do well here. Does that make sense? Okay? Yeah. Okay. In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Sri Krishna describes 4 different kinds of asuras who do not surrender to him and thus waste their human form of life. Quote, those miscreants who are grossly foolish, who are lowest among mankind, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion, and who partake of the atheistic nature of demons, do not surrender unto me. Bhagavad Gita 7:15. So our test is there. If one is not Krishna conscious, then he must be within these divisions. Naradhama, Mudha, Duskritina, Mayaya Pratijnana. And one who has surrendered to Krishna, then what is he? Ah, so, sa mahatma sudurlabha. Samahatma Sudur Laba, lecture on Bhagavad Gita 9.2, Calcutta, March 8, 1973. So we have these four groups. So either Sura, which means devotee, and then we have neophyte, Madhyama, and Uttam. Or if one's non-devotee, then they have their also categories, like that. So in here, grossly foolish means they're not interested in anything higher, the subtle aspects, refinement, development. Basically, they just work hard, you know, to maintain themselves, maintain whatever is, you know, they like, you know, what is their enjoyment, their recreation, they go after very heartily, but they don't necessarily worry about what others think or if it's developed or refined or anything like that. The lowest among mankind. That means generally is someone who is of more refined, developed, educated, sophisticated, or what we call today professionals, who, having come in contact with God consciousness, reject it. Understand? This is what makes them their position. That they're very qualified, they're coming from good family, good positions, because it mentions in sixth canto, believe it or not, that anyone anywhere in the world that is born into a good family, a wealthy family, or how you say, religious family, noble family, any of these that we would call a good birth, that is due to previously performance of devotional activities in their previous life, Agyata Sukriti. So it means anyone on the planet who's in a good position is because of having done some Agyata Sukriti. Like that. So there isn't anything outside of devotional services benefiting anybody. So when devotees not remembering this point, then look at these people. They're so successful, and what are they doing? You know, what did they do to get there? Why are they successful? Because previously they did Agyata Sukriti. That's why they're successful. Not because they got seven habits that you read in a stupid book. Right? They already have that. Why do they have it? Because they've done devotional service. That's why they have it. Because they didn't read a book. They just do it. The losers read the book. Right? Does that make sense? Once one devotee, he used to like going to these programs. And I'm not sure it may have been before he was a devotee, but I can't say for sure. But he's, you know, a bit of a, you know, organizer and stuff like that. So he was at one of these big programs like that. And he was sitting in the back, and when it ended, he just sat there and was thinking. Then he noticed that while he was thinking, everybody had left, and all that was left was the person giving the seminar. He's there picking up his papers, putting his briefcase, closing up. So he walked down and came up to the guy. And he asked him, says, now you've given this seminar, you know, on how to be, you know, a manager, how to be successful in life and all this and that. So he asked him, how much percentage of the people that have come here for this program do you think are going to be able to take advantage and use this and actually become successful? And the guy just looked at him and said, none. He says, it just makes them feel good to come here and hear about how they can get successful. But none of them will become successful. Because if they were successful, they'd already be doing it. They wouldn't have to come and listen to me. They're coming to me for feel good. You know, like that. The people who are actually can use what I say are already doing it. Right? So interesting, no? Like that. So they know. The guys giving the seminars know. Because the point is someone is good, it's a few points, they'll catch it, immediately go use it. They won't have to keep coming back again and again and again. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that in here is that they're successful because of something else. So being born in these big families and all that, that's because of Agyata Sukriti. Right? This is in the sixth canto, when they were talking about Ajamil, because Ajamil's position, Ajamil, actually the name means what has never happened before and will never happen again. Because his position is unique. Here is someone born in a high-grade Brahmin family. Right, his parents are practicing, he's fully practicing, he marries his wife is highly qualified, everything is perfect. You can't get a better situation for a Brahmin. He left that situation for a prostitute. Then it's not that he just left, went out, and then thought, this is stupid, and comes back. He's been doing this since he was a young man, and now the story that we're hearing about takes place when he's 88. Actually, probably even more than 88. Because his son Narayan was born when he was 88. Right? That means there's a group of Brahmins I've heard about in Bengal, but it's a rare group. One of them, we had a teacher here once, like that. When he came in the door at 70, right, he came in with a Fu Manchu mustache, you know, black and dapper and like that. And he remembers when he was a kid seeing his grandfather, who was 120 years old. Right? He was born when his father was 80. So they're very, how you say, powerful Brahminical community. That it's not uncommon for them to have kids when they're 70, 80 years old. And their son, we're not talking about girls, but sons, right? So very, very powerful. So it does happen. So here it is, then he's 88 years old, and he's still with the same prostitute and has his kids and everything like that. So in this case, then, basically, he's with the girl. I'm not sure if he married her or not, but you get the idea because she's referred to in that way that she's still working on the point of he comes up with money, she stays. He doesn't come up with money, she leaves. Right? Not that in the Vedic culture the prostitutes didn't decide that they wanted to marry one of their customers, and then that becomes they become perfectly chaste wives and everything like that. That we're not talking about here. Otherwise, he would have said she was, but now she's not. She's referred to in this way means she's still working on this principle. Right? What does that mean? One you can say is, one, that's her character, but that's not what we're talking about. Is that at 88 years old, he's still that enthusiastic to be able to work on that principle, to get so much facility to take care of such a woman. Right? Now, this is bad or is this bad? Right? Okay, now this person, who by our modern definition would basically be, no class, no kirtan, kicked out of the society, right? He then says, chants the Lord's holy name at the time of death, gets saved by the Vishnu Dutas, right? And then we find after that, when he's that, then he takes up, gets serious about his Krishna consciousness and comes to meet to Nishta. You can read in the verses, goes to Nishta, Ruchi, Ashakti, and comes to the platform of Bhava. Like that, because he just decides to go and stay in a temple and like that. Does that make sense? So this kind of position that even nowadays we would not agree to, then is going on. So that is the point, is he's come from such bad, good situation, left it for the worse, and then came back. Okay? So then we see is that so in that canto then is described that people are getting these benefits of high-grade births because of Ajñāta Sukriti. They perform devotional service, right? It says that someone does, they perform devotional service, but not so, they don't become so steady, so serious, so then they get distracted, they go to the heavenly planets. After the heavenly planets, then they're born in religious or, wealthy or noble families. Right? Those who are serious about devotional service, they're then born as devotees. They're born in devotee families. But those who are not are born in these pious families. Right? So now, one of those persons then who has done devotional service, is in the position they are because of that, then rejects devotional service, they're Naradhama. Understand? That's why that kind of preaching is very delicate. Because you don't want them to reject. But at the same time, they're smart enough to understand what's real and what's political. They live in the world of political correctness, so they want some reality. That's why they take up religion. They want political correctness, they just have to go to the office. Right? They just have to move in their community and go to one of their social parties or somebody's wedding or go on a vacation. They live in that world. They're looking for something real. You give it to them, they take it. They don't, then they take that position of this lowest among mankind, Naradhama, because they could have the best position of that, they reject it. That makes sense. Then Mayaya Pratigyana, whose knowledge is stolen by its intelligence. Yes. Seven habits. Well, there's an eighth habit now, so it seems there's something more that the seven didn't quite get across. Because people following the seven weren't successful, so he has to throw in the eighth so that maybe that will be the catalyst to something. Yes.
And in this regard, what is the use of education for those people who already know
the effect? Means about which education? It means about the self-help education. Is that what you're meaning? No. Are you saying also? Then what are you talking about?
Education means.
Yes, but what are they teaching in the self-help? They're trying to teach an understanding, not a skill. People think it's a skill, but it's not. They're successful because of an attitude. Some of the self-help talk more on the attitude, some talk more on the skills, or a combination. So there's nothing wrong with the knowledge they're giving. My point is that that knowledge is only meant for those who are in that position. In other words, the people that you should be talking to about that is people that are successful. Because then they can from it, because they're successful in one way, but they may not be so expert at all the habits. And so they can learn from that because they have the ability. What I'm saying is just because you read a book on this, you read a medical book, do you become a doctor? You know, so that's the whole point. Is that the body of knowledge you have to know, but you have to have the ability to do it. You have to have the nature to do it. Right? Most kids when they go to university, get a degree. Why do they choose a particular degree? Because that's just what is their passion and what they want to do in life? Or it's because they know that's their best chance to get a job, and it's kind of within something that they could live with doing. You know what I'm saying? A few people from when they're young, the really successful ones, when they're young, they know what they want to do. He wants to be a doctor. He already knows that when he's 8-10 years old. Right? Those guys grow up to be the big, big ones. And other ones, they go up and become just general because they just figured it out because, well, they were thinking about maybe law or that, but there's no good openings. They can only get into this, but they have a spot. They can get into this medical school. Does that make sense? So that's most kids are choosing something according to what actually is going to make them money, not according to what they necessarily want to do. That's what I'm saying. So it doesn't mean they're doing it, but it doesn't mean that there's something special. Right? In other words, you have doctors that know the basic thing, and they're doing their doctor business. And it works. But there are those who have special intelligence in there and can work out unique things that they can understand because they understand the whole science of medicine. The others are taught the technique of medicine. But these understand the whole science of it. And because that, they become something special. Right? Does that make sense? So that's why we're reading, why do we read about, how you say, in your journals are people who are like that. Right? Your general practitioner is not writing an article in a journal. Right? Just like we have so many Ayurvedic doctors, they know so much. But reading Charaka, Shushruta, all these ones. Why? Because these ones knew the science to such a degree that they can understand how it applies in everything. You know, they can tell you what is the balance of mucus, bile, and air in that column there. Because otherwise, how would it work? Right? That creeper over there. See that thing there that comes over there? There's so much like that, sticking out like that. How can that do that? That means it has to be very strong. Right? Does that make sense? So there's got to be a lot of pitta and there's got to be a lot of kapha in there. You'll find a lot of times creepers are slimy, right? Because they have to be able to hold themselves up. So there has to be a lot of something in there, very powerful, a lot of energy. I'm saying, you understand my point? So it's that they can see everything through that. It's not just being a doctor, they see everything through that. Does that make sense? So that's the idea, that's what we're talking about. Not that the body of knowledge isn't important, it's good knowledge. Bhaktivinoda Thakura went to so much trouble to say, there's no thought that's bad. It's just a matter of being able to place it where it goes in the body of knowledge and in the hierarchy of knowledge. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah, the habits are going to be based on qualities. Qualities means your action. Right? So that's the habits. But then what's the identity of that successful person? What is the goals of that? That someone else talks about. Right? You know what I'm saying? Others talk about, yes, you can do it, you can. Why? Because they're talking identity. Others just say the goal. Others can't distinguish between desire and attachment, so the law of attraction. You just think it'll happen, it will happen. But why is that true? Because you thought it? You're the controller of things? No, because Krishna's arranged that this field of activity, what you're attracted to, if you contemplate it enough, that's her saying, think about it, you contemplate it, what happens? You get attached to the idea. When you get attached to the idea, then you do something. But is he explaining that? No. He's just focusing on the one, is that there. So the knowledge is useful, but it's only part of the process of sambandha abhideya and prayojana. And they know if you push on the one long enough, the other two come. But they don't understand the combination between all three and what's their position and all that. So one works very nicely in one situation, but it won't work in another situation. Someone who is insecure, you use this. Someone who's secure, he doesn't want to hear about, I can do it, I know I can do it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole problem is that it's not complete. That's what we're talking about. See? The thought's not bad, it's not a problem. The idea people want to get educated, this is all good. But the point of just, I bought the book, or I heard it, now I'm expert at it, that's a problem. But that's common. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
So what actually turns a loser into a success?
What turns a loser into success? I see. There'd be absolutely no personal motivation in this question, right? No. Just to make sure. Just for the record. Okay. Basically, the bottom line is it means artha, because we'll could take success as artha. Right? So artha comes from dharma. Right? And the best dharma is chanting Hare Krishna. So we already have the best, but the point is those who can't understand this get distracted by these other things. These can be some techniques that are used, but unless the foundation is there, unless the devotional is there, unless the religious is there, the art is not going to come. And if it's coming without seeing the connection, that means it's coming from previous, you know, dharma or bhakti. It's not coming from what you're doing right now, because what you're doing now won't generate it. Right? It's just like this. If I say, okay, well, it means cooking. I just throw some stuff in the pot and, you know, with the fire on and move it around, and then I have, you know, a preparation. Right? Now, would that actually get you something cooked? No. Now, let us say I have some leftovers and I throw them in the pot, push them around like that and with the fire on. Will I end up with a preparation? Yes. So then I could say, see, my theory works. Yeah, but it only works on leftovers. You know, if you had fresh vegetable, it wouldn't work. So they're in the illusion that it's happening from right now. See, I'm a great cook. I just push it around. No, they have no idea, other than just fire is there, pot is there, put something sting in and push it around. That much they got down. But the whole, what really is going on, they don't know. So the principle of, means if they can't explain the principle of predestiny and free will, then you can't understand the science of Vastutrai. And so they're not going to speak on that. Because they like to leave predestiny out of it. No, it's whatever, you can do whatever you, but point is, so they're dealing with free will. But free will is based on the predestiny that you're getting. What do I deal with? I come here, this stuff's already on the table. So I deal with this. You know what I'm saying? So the predestiny is that I left the book here, and so by that action of leaving the book on the table, it means later when I come, the book is still going to be on the table. So when I come back again, then it's not a matter of free will, what's on the table, it's what I left there. So now that's the predestiny. Now what I do with that book now when I come back to the table, that's my free will. I leave it there again, I pick it up and read it, I take it and put it on the shelf, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah, so these are, the whole point is the process of human life, that's what makes success. Human beings are successful. So anybody who's successful today who's not acting as one was before. That's all. So there's nothing outside of this idea that there's something outside of devotional service, outside of Krishna's creation and Krishna's laws. That's illusion. That's Maya. Right? The world is Krishna's, the jivas are Krishna's, and the laws are Krishna's. Someone who accepts that, that's a devotee. Someone who doesn't accept that, that's asura. That's what there is. Does that make sense? Is that okay? So this idea that there's something else. No, it's God's laws. Otherwise, why is it working? Because it's God's law. If you think about something and, yes, I want this and like this and that, that would be good. You know, what would you like? Write it all down. Okay, write it down. Now contemplate that. So what did you do? You wrote down what? What did you write down? Goal, desires, but technically what are you working with? Ideas, but what are those ideas in Vastu tribe?
Sambandha,
but in this case, what is it exactly? Because we're distinguishing here. Not quite. Getting close. It means it may be, but when you're talking about what you want, attachment will come. So we're leaving out the desire. Do we remember about Shankarshan, Prajumna, Adiruddha, and Vasudev? So Shankarshan is what? Sambandha, but which aspect of Sambandha? The field, right? So what I'm writing down is there's me, there's my world, and then there are things what I would like to get from that world. So you're actually identifying the field. Because the theoretical understanding of Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, that's still Sambandha. That's Sambandha Gyan. Right? Who you are, what your world is, and it's supposed to be God's involved in that, right? So these are all the things I like. Then I look at it and go, yes, this is interesting. Or you might take a few off, put a few more on. So now what you're dealing with is now the element of prajumna, what I like, what I'm attracted to. Now you contemplate what you're attracted to, then Krishna says in the Gita, what happens when you contemplate the objects of the senses?
When it gets attached.
You get attached, so that throws it into prayoja. Now it's a need. I have to have this. And if it's a need, then what are you going to do?
Act.
You're going to act. You understand? So this covers all those points that they're making. But this whole science complete, that they're not explaining. And how this is based on your free will, based on, you know, God's giving that independence. Now, you do it right, according to God's laws, not only do you get what you want, but you'll be able to keep it, and in the future it will be there. You don't follow the laws, then it's like stealing, right? You got what you wanted, but because you stole it, then the authorities are going to come and catch you and punish you. So that means if you get anything in this world not by God's laws, you'll lose it. But if you get it by God's laws, it stays. That's why people are born in the next life with facility. Why? Because, you know, did that baby, you know, make that billions of dollars that he's worth, you know, now is born in the billion-dollar family? Why? Because he has that karma from before. He's performed the piety. It goes with you. Right? In other words, you can't take the goods with you, but your piety goes with you. Right? That's what they didn't bring out in that play. Right? That makes sense? No? Yes?
In the process that you just mentioned, according to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, where does contemplation fit?
Contemplation is prajumna. Right? You contemplate the object because you're not attached to it. You think that's nice, that's interesting, that looks like something that would be, you know what I'm saying?
Contemplation is taking more of an intellectual point of view. It's not.
That's why Prajumna is intelligence. You understand? Prajumna is the intelligence. Shankarshan is the ego. Who am I? I am this person. I live here. I do these things. So therefore, this is what I can do and what would be the good for me as this identity. Right? So that's your Sankarshan. Now, looking at that and saying, yes, this is nice. I like this. That's Prajumna. Then contemplating, yeah, I could do it this way, I could do it that way, there's so many different ways. That's Prajumna. Then you get attached to it. Right? So that's Aniruddha. Once you're attached, then you're going to apply what you're thinking about in Prajumna into action. In the field, Sankarshan. In other words, that combination of what you've contemplated, you know, with the actual field, right? Then your sambandha is complete. Then that will be your action. Right? But that's based on your qualities, therefore the habits of the seven habits. A habit means it's based on some quality. It means you have practiced something. Then, by practicing that with intelligence, develops a habit. Right? It means that the habit's not coming means there's no practice or there's no application of intelligence. You know, you may think, yeah, no, it'd be very good if I exercised, but you never do. So there's no habit. You know what I'm saying? Or you do exercise, but you don't think about, you know, why you should be doing it, then something else comes up, you stop. So habit means is intelligence and practice at the same time. That's what makes them successful, because they're using manana correctly. They have the skill from shravana, and they're applying manana. But the others think, just by shravana, I'll be successful. That's the weakness. That's why the man said they'll never actually be successful, because they won't actually apply it. Not that they couldn't, they just don't. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? He's not saying they'll never be and it's impossible. No, it's possible, just they don't do it. That's all. Does that make sense? Because these aren't... So that kind of person... not taking up Krishna consciousness, then is, oh my God, is Mayaya Pratigyana. No, excuse me. Naradama. That's why they're the lowest. They could be the highest, but they reject it, so therefore they're the lowest. Right? Someone who's just a fool is right in the middle. Right? That's average, right? So now, if you're smarter than that, but don't use it, you're actually dumber than just an average guy. Right? Because if you have something that is valuable and don't use it, you're more foolish than the person who doesn't have it. Or even doesn't even know it exists. Does that make sense? Just like, which is lower, the impersonalist who merges in Brahman, or the yogi who merges in Brahman?
The yogi.
The yogi. Why the yogi?
Because he knows that God has a form and everything.
Yeah, and then he rejects that and merges. So he's more foolish than the impersonalist who only thinks there's Brahman. He doesn't know that there's a form. Right? So in the same way, the Naradhamma is lower than the Mudha. Does that make sense? Okay, so end here, and then tomorrow we'll go on with the Mayaya Pratigyanas. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi
Shankarshan is ego and Prajumna is
intelligence.
And Aniruddha is the mind. And Vasudeva is the senses?
No, senses are also in with intelligence. They go into the senses.
And what is like Vasudeva the action?
Vasudeva is the combination of all three of those.
And the senses, they are in all of them also?
No, the senses are the mind and the mind. In other words, the intelligence is used from Prajumna, the mind is from Aniruddha. That combination gets you your experience when you act. Because you get the experience while you're doing it. Right? Happiness comes when you obtain what you wanted to get. But the happiness is actually coming in the process. If there's anything that we're coming up to that you want to rewrite, rewrite it before we get there. And then
oh, that's what you mean.
But then this is 8-9 from here.
Okay.
You can always do it after when it makes sense.